Hey everybody, welcome to Shop Talk Show number 256, kind of a code for Miami episode. Maybe some of you know I'm mostly a Wisconsin fella. I live in Milwaukee most of the time, but I've spent the last, the winter down here in Miami, and I've met lots of interesting tech people in Miami. A couple weeks ago, we met Rebecca Monson, who's a tech person down here in Miami, and through her, I met these two fellas that we're going to talk to who have heavy involvement in an organization called Code for Miami. And it has kind of a powerful ending, I think, in that they've built something really cool for Miami. And we'll get to what that is and the whole story behind it and that thing. I think it's interesting. It's just a goes to show you story of what can happen when you get people together and you care about making people's lives better and technology and government and smashing all those things together for the betterment of the world, which is cool. So that story coming up. I should mention that this show is sponsored in part by CodePen. It was just CodePen this week. This was a big release for us at CodePen this week. The release is called CodePen Projects, and it's kind of like a full-on IDE in the browser. Maybe not full-on, because it's CodePen. It's a front-end playground. It doesn't do your back-end processing or anything like that. It's a front-end code editor. But it's more like what you're used to in a local IDE like Atom or Sublime Text or Visual Studio or whatever, and that you have a sidebar full of files that's representative of your file system. You get a file system for once. You can have 5 HTML files and your SAS partials and your ES6 includes and all that stuff, all the pre-processing, all the comfort of CodePen in CodePen projects. So there's still pens and that whole, all that you're used to on CodePen is the same. You can just, now you can create projects as well that are, is kind of like, in a sense, a more powerful version of CodePen. That's available now. Check out codepen.io/pro/projects if you want like an explainer page to go all through all that. For now, Dave, let's kick this episode off.
Hey there, Shopping Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave, paying my taxes, doing my civic duty, don't you know, Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer. Hey, Chris, where do all my taxes go?
Where do all taxes go, Dave? They go to the government. We're gonna end up talking a little bit about the government today on Shop Talk Show and related topics like what you can do for the government and open data and civic hacking and code for X and things like that. And you know what? This story started out with what I know is a cool ending to the story. So I was like, I want to get to that. But before I like reveal what the cool ending is, although God, now I'm building this up more than I probably deserve to. let's like go backwards from that and be like, I wonder what the story behind this thing is and get that story. I don't know what we're going to title the show yet. You already know, dear listener, because you're looking at it in your podcatcher of choice, but the Chris Coyer of right this minute doesn't know, but certainly it starts with something Code for Miami. And two people are heavily related to that. One, Mike Sorosti. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
How goes it?
Fantastic. Thanks for being on. And right next to Mike, shoulder to shoulder in the same room, Ernie,
just Shung works. Call me God, X-Wing. H before S. It confuses everyone.
Ha-seong.
Yes, just like that. Just like that. Wow, I haven't heard that since the fourth grade, Mike. The fourth freaking grade. Wow, that's good.
Mike and Ernie are our guests today.
I was going to say, Ernie, could I tell you something? A secret? A Shop Talk Show secret? I think I met you a long, long time ago at like a South by Southwest in 2000, I want to say like 3, where you won like a Webby.
Is this so right? Back in a former life, what? I had a blog called Little Yellow Different. I wrote about my mom a lot. So as you do when there's blogs that literally no one writes about, like, crazy Asian mothers and writes about RSS specs instead, then some people read it. And it got me a free drink or two back in the days. But I actually kind of remember that was South by Southwest was the big blog get together back in the day. So it was a lot of fun.
It was really neat. Just it was a room of about 100 people, and that was everyone who blogged like in 2003.
Really was, right? Like I, you know, and folks that are like that we now take for granted that just show up now on Oprah, right? Like Evan Williams, like oh there he is on Oprah, right? Or like Stuart Butterfield, who you know now Slack, former Flickr, right? And they were doing like.
Turns out blogging was a good idea.
Who knew, right? That one chick that now has her own Food Network show, the Pioneer Woman, she was a blogger, right? Yeah. She got her.
Where's
Food
my
Network
TV show.
Show? Yeah, right.
I don't even know where to start. Does it make sense to start at Code for Miami in the much more recent future kind of thing? Like, were you there at the beginning of Code for Miami? What is Code for Miami?
Yeah, sure. So let me just kind of, we'll both do like the real quick kind of overview. So yeah. I am, so my backstory is I'm actually originally from the Bay Area. I moved to Miami, Florida 5 years ago for a relationship, to make a long distance relationship not so long. Kind of didn't really have much of didn't know many people here, didn't necessarily find my kind of crew here. I bumped into a lovely woman who may have already been on Shop Talk, Rebecca Monson.
Yeah, we had Rebecca on recently, and that's through who I know through my fiance and how I know both of you. Ultimately, that's the kind of the connection here.
That's why we're here, right? I started a couple of meetups, there was an event called the National Day of Civic Hacking where I kind of like threw my hat in, and then we started this volunteer group, Code for Miami.
So civic hacking, that's a good key word. What does that even mean, right? Like, I guess, is it a hackathon, but for civic?
Yeah, so we'll build up, National Day of Civic Hacking was sort of the beginning of the end. I'm a 10-year practitioner in government now, started about 10 years ago, somewhere around, 3-4 years ago, we had Richard Bookman was a professor over at University of Miami. This guy shows up on our doorstep. I was with at Miami-Dade County at the time, and shows up on our doorstep. I was with the Department of Communications. It was the Government Information Center, but we also had a few software developers in-house working out of that department. We were building the county's website and our 311 answer center. So this guy shows up on our doorstep and says, there's an event coming up called National Day of Civic Hacking. What we're looking for is the county to offer up some of its data so that we can invite a bunch of developers in to come in and use it and build cool apps. We're like, that sounds amazing. Let's go do that. So we spent about 3 months planning, building up to that event. Ernie and Rebecca, I think, might have been both on the planning committee.
We were
at
on the planning
time.
Committee, yeah.
We didn't know each other at that point. We sort of got to know each other through that process. So we got to National Day of Civic Hacking, and we brought some basic data that we quickly realized was not in a format that was usable by.
So what's what civic hacking and open data are always hand in hand, right? It's kind of like this. I don't know if we're going to build something for the government. We need some data to build it around. They are hand in hand, those things. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think what we saw real quickly at that event was that we were not providing data that was useful for outside people to use. So that was sort of the big takeaway of that.
And you say we because you were the government.
I was government. Yeah, I'm using we in terms of government. It was the big reveal. And it was also like this whole group of people that were interested in using and building stuff with it, which is a big turning point for us.
So you also have to kind of understand the context of all of this. So Miami obviously is not necessarily what you first think of when you think of technology. Right. I could say that the same goes for like kind of civics, right? Like, you know, it Miami definitely has like reputations of it being kind of like, you know, one giant rollicking LMFAO video, right? and that is not untrue, by the way, for what it's worth.
It's just also a lot of other things.
Right.
It's also that. Yeah.
But I think what it also is that it's a lot of folks trying to, because the city is kind of in its like awkward, gangly adolescence, a lot of people are trying to do really interesting things that we can get away with here, that we wouldn't necessarily do in other cities, because other cities have really established presences, right? And they already have those folks that are doing.
So there's a bit of a metaphor kind of that, like, let's say all of a sudden a bunch of people show up at my house and they want to rake my yard, but I don't have any trash bags or rakes or anything. Like, there's people that wanted to help the government, and you're sitting there like, we don't even have what you need to help us.
Yeah, and that's a great analogy, because at that point I'm like, oh man, I've got like, you know, 15 people here ready to like fix everything that I've been trying to fix myself for a while, and yeah. They can't do it. So now we're all in a point of frustration, because these people who want to help can't help, and me, I can absolutely use the help, and I am not ready. So that set in motion a lot of events to sort of create.
So there's a National Day of Civic Hacking, which kicks off. There's enough excitement, and it's frustrating, but it's not so frustrating that some people don't want to like keep doing it.
Oh man, it just created the appetite for sure. I mean, I don't think we got anything tangible, like we didn't get any apps or anything cool out of it. But in terms of us planting the seed for all of us to commit the next few years of work to building this, that totally happened.
Now, on the kind of community organizer side, It's literally Rebecca and I. So the way it worked out, especially in the early days, is that there is a nonprofit organization based in San Francisco called Code for America. I was super involved with that organization. They actually had a fellowship program.
Okay, so you are a fellow too. So these two things are related, because I feel like a lot of people have heard of Code for America, right? And they have this great tagline. The two biggest levers for improving people's lives at scale are technology and government. We put them together. You know, like, wow, cool.
So one of their flagship programs at that time was the fellowship. Basically, I took a 1-year sabbatical from my engineering job at Rackspace.
We need to build up to that, because you did about a year.
I did
stuff on the brigade. So it's important for people, I think, to understand.
Yeah, that's true, right? Too. Okay. So rewind that a little bit. I think for us, what was happening was, obviously the idea of civics was relatively new to Miami. And what we did is that we had these kind of open events every Monday night. And we had essentially had free pizza. We had, like, the joke, someone actually called like us Code for Pizza for a while, which is, in hindsight, a little kind of disingenuous, but you know, it was a lot of folks were also, it was also at a time where we had our very first coding boot camp in Miami, WinCode, and a lot of folks were really, really hungry to learn how to code, and we don't necessarily have, you know, very hardcore tech or engineering for your universities, so folks were kind of coming in and wanting to learn how to code. And at first we were like, well, you know, this is about civic stuff. And then we kind of changed our narrative a little bit. And we're like, okay, you know, if you want to learn how to code, we will give you the environment. We'll give you, you know, the foundations. But why don't you work on these things?
Yeah. And Ernie, so, I mean, me growing up here in Miami, this was like a big revelation to me that we actually were having a tech scene that was starting to become something. You know, right. I've been trapped in government, you know, with colleagues doing sort of tech work, but we didn't know that this thing just down the street was sort of starting to take form. And right after National Day of Civic Hacking, Ernie and Rebecca decided that they were going to keep this momentum going. They created these Monday hack nights that Ernie's talking about, branded it Code for Miami, and all of a sudden, me and my colleagues in government were like, wow, we have this thing that's happening that we can attend and be active in. And maybe we didn't know what, but we know something can come out of here. In the meantime, what can we do to facilitate these people having a dialogue and conversation with government? So Ernie and Rebecca were doing the community work side of it, sort of building, you know, networking with the developers. Ernie obviously already had a reputation that he was building here as one of our first, you know, like modern tech developers in town.
He totally had that reputation,
whether it's true or not. And then us, you know, within government, I wanted to make sure that we played a role in that. So offered up as the official government partner. So every time that these guys had some kind of crazy idea about, hey, we want to build a map that tells you where all our 311 flood reports were coming from.
That's another thing, right? These people are volunteering their time, so they get to work on whatever they want to work on, right? It's not like you're...
Yeah, totally. And that was sort of... So that message has taken a little bit of a long time, and it's an ongoing thread. As soon as I mentioned that there are volunteers in town working on, you know, building cool stuff, there's a tendency within folks in government, great, we've had this thing that we've wanted to build for a long time. Can they build it for us for free? And I'm like, you're missing the point, guys, right?
Yeah.
So so that's been another part of the role that from the beginning has been an interesting sort of bridge and getting people to understand, no, these are volunteers who are volunteering. They've got great ideas. We need to be open to this environment. And they're piloting great stuff that we are potentially able to replicate within.
Right, and meanwhile, like all these, you know, all these folks that are coming for the first time, they're learning about stuff that, you know, front-end nerds like us kind of take for granted, right? Like for a lot of these folks, this is their first exposure to like GitHub, right? It's their first exposure to like what open source truly means instead of just some kind of fun buzzword that they've heard.
And incidentally, not just them, but within government has hung a long-standing tradition of just hiring really, really big companies in its... quest to be risk averse, right? And this is the way look, it's largely perceived that to be risk averse, you have to hire these large companies, and it's fine. There's a place for, you know, the big, you know, traditional firms, but it was creating this, like, what is this open source thing? What are these, you know, these modern stacks were just not something that government was really thinking about, because they weren't the official, like, let's say at that time, you know, maybe Microsoft was huge. It wasn't Microsoft stack, therefore it was somehow not legitimate. So there were things being piloted in this volunteer environment that was making government pay attention. And all of a sudden now we're having conversations within government about open source, or it was legitimizing people within government that were already talking about open source. We had a team in our department that was building an open source CRM application for government, and no one was really paying attention. So that was a little bit of an uphill battle. To have folks outside sort of validating this and say, hey, these are people that are legit in the tech community. They're volunteering their time to use those skills within government. We should maybe pay attention when they say, you're onto something here, government. Keep on going down this track.
And it inspires both ways. There's people who are compelled to show up at stuff like this in a way that they maybe wouldn't be otherwise. Like people that aren't going to show up at the Ruby on Rails meetup because they, whatever, maybe they're in tech, but they just don't care to do stuff like that, but are somehow inspired to show up at a Code for X event because there's like, I can really do something here. And the government is listening too, right? It's kind of a...
Yeah, I mean, for us, the way we've kind of also kind of directed at least Monday Hack Nights has been like also trying to, what can we... How can we use technology to make the places we live better? And that's the common kind of quest I give out to folks when someone comes in for the first time, especially given like, you know, folks that might be a little bit younger. Like, so folks that show up to like a Code for Miami meeting and it changes for every city, they skew a little younger, a little bit more inexperienced. With technology in general, and they want to get their feet wet, right? But at the end of the day, they get the whole goal of what we're trying to do, which is making our cities look like a better place.
Yeah, and to your point, Chris, that's exactly. I mean, it was a fantastic opportunity, not just even on the like pure technology route, but just to demonstrate that we have a common goal. Government workers largely are perceived as like, oh, they're just collecting their paycheck. They're, you know, they're bare minimum kind of stuff. And in this case, you know, they're seeing, you know, some of my colleagues and me come in and it was like, wow, all right, you guys are actually trying to do something. You don't know how because you don't have the skill set, but we can share a common goal and that we're trying to make our communities better.
So Dave's in Austin, you know, if you're a longtime listener.
Yep.
It looks like the version of this in Austin is totally active. It's called Open Austin. Does it cross your path, Dave?
It does. I've seen some Open Austin talks at, you know, events like Refresh. Open Austin hosts a weekly or monthly meetup. I actually, it's on my like to-do list to attend, but I do follow them on Twitter. But kind of it's been a challenge. I think Austin and Miami are not too different. Kind of having to like chip away and unfreeze all this data that the city has. It's been quite an effort for the city to do that. And we have one of those situations. I mean, I don't know how the government works, but that's why I'm here. But we have one of those situations where Austin famously paid like got a $700,000 contract to redo their website some number of years ago. And a lot of local people, developers like myself, were kind of offended because that did not go to a local agency at all. It went to like out of state too. And that's a lot of money for a website. And that's a lot of money for a non-Texas company. So I think it was just very kind of the first foray into like, how does government
website. And see how that might fire somebody up, you know, that wouldn't otherwise be anyway. I'd be like, what?
And it all boils down to risk aversion and procurement. So I did this fellowship, and the fellowship was 1 year. Yeah, it was around 1 year. 1 year with Miami-Dade County. So I was basically embedded within government to kind of understand how at least the county worked. And you know, it was a fascinating experience, right? Because it's a lot of it. It boils down to the fact that because they, you know, want to make the process fair and inclusive and all that fun stuff, they put in these rules. And then they keep on adding rules, and they don't necessarily change their rules. And then the next thing you know,
it's easy to add rules, but it's not so easy to remove another one. So they stack on top of each other.
Right. Next thing you know, you have the folks that may be able to put in bids for the site turn out to be like those folks that have an entire like staff that whose sole purpose is to apply for these, you know, for these procurement grants. Right. So, a lot of it, and that is still kind of a huge problem in government.
Yeah. You know? And that's something that, so I started, so we did this in my time at the county for a little bit. Ernie came on board. The idea of the Code for America Fellowship, as opposed to the brigade, is that the fellowship were actually, three paid people, not just Ernie, but two people from other places that came in and got embedded for a year officially. So I was able to focus the work a little bit more than what we were able to do with the brigade. So that was a nice trial run, but as it still presented another challenge that continues to this day. So I moved over to the city of Miami about a year ago as their, 9 months ago, as their chief innovation officer, which was great because talking about how where we started and where we are today, the fact that it's not important because it's me. It's important because the city of Miami hired a chief innovation officer, which was this incredible
signal. Not all cities do that, right?
There are a few others for sure, but it's not many. And it sort of legitimized this thing that, okay, we are now going to create this connection, official connection between, I was doing this in sort of more informal capacity
right.
at the county. And here it's like, no, now we're going to make this your thing, right? Where you're going to be doing all this business and process improvement work, but as a function of that, we're wrapping up business process improvement with this civic tech work that you've been doing, and we're going to sort of package that, and we're going to create a clear pathway. So as a result of that, now I can actually start tackling these issues of start working with the procurement office now on how we take this civic tech work that's happening on a volunteer basis, and we create a pathway to make it legitimate and be able to bring that in as an official thing within government, because that still remains a challenge. Like, they can build this great prototype within on a Monday hack night, that's great, but legitimizing it where like government feels comfortable about that, there's still a challenge in that. No, you still got to go with this official firm that's got a history that, and these firms tend to fall in these large, you know, six figures, right? To your point that you were making about what Austin did. Austin's not the only one. Boston's another one. I mean, that number actually is not that high compared to what I've seen elsewhere. So it is an ongoing discussion, an ongoing challenge, how we can bridge this incredible work that's happening at the volunteer level. We've gotten to the point where government has acknowledged it. We're making that a thing and trying to build that pathway, but we're still, I think, wrestling with, okay, how can we still build a piece of software that government is going to use and use regularly, and it's part of your primary.
So we're moving up to now. The story so far, if people are just dialing in, is kind of like there's a civic hack night. It births these people hanging out together in Miami. It turns into Code for Miami and hack nights and stuff. Turns out the government was involved all along, totally interested, listening. Ernie gets this fellowship. Some people who are involved in this actually get embedded into government for a while. That's pretty cool. And then this thing happens to you, Mike, where I don't know who offers you the job, or you made your own job or what. You turn into the CIO of Miami. All this stuff is just snowballing. Right.
Yeah, you've summarized that pretty well. And in the city's case, the city manager and the assistant city manager came and found me. So that shows that whatever was happening sort of in the community, there was enough buzz around it that there was an interest.
And for what it's worth, it should also be emphasized that, like, Mike was actually just, I could say just, he was a program manager at the county. So he was doing a lot of this on his own accord, right? Like,
it was not my job description.
It was certainly not his job description, but he was kind of the unspoken kind of champion to do all these things. So if it weren't for folks on the inside like Mike.
Sure, it takes a little gumption, a little elbow.
You know, but it's not, it created, so for me, the big case has been like, I am not the only one, right? Like this is, and Ernie is not the only one either. We were just, we were sort of trying to let everybody know that it was okay to behave the way that we were behaving, I guess, right? So yes, to your point, where we are now.
So before we get too much further in that, we'll do the other city thing with the you know, going back to Austin for a minute. If you look, it looks like it's open-austin.org. It's the same in that it's active. There are people that care that show up. They they're also a brigade of Code for America. There's just and it's a similar size city. There's a ton that's the same, and then a ton that's different because it's a totally different city, and they have a totally different. What do you imagine it's like? What do you imagine they're starting? Is opening up that data the hardest part, or what do you suspect are the, you know? And but maybe not even just Austin. Then there's, who knows, Phoenix, and I'm sure all the cities are kind of facing the same.
Yeah. Struggles. Yeah. Releasing data is for sure tricky for a number of reasons. So I'm on round two of doing that in a municipality. Round one was at the county. And I think when I left it, there were roughly maybe 10 to 15 data sets. Mm-hmm. And those were challenging because data is, it seems easy enough to like crank out a CSV file, which is essentially open data. It's just a bunch of flat files for the most part posted up somewhere. And a lot of times it takes a lot of effort to get these, you know, these databases kicked out on a regular scale, pushed out in this way, right? So, and convincing, you know, database administrators that this is worth their time to do, and somehow in the long run, this is going to lead to them having to create fewer reports.
Or program managers or directors. I think a lot of our conversations being embedded in the county was having those conversations and trying to assuage those fears, right? Like, and a lot of those fears were things like, if people misinterpret the data and it shows up in the newspaper, my job is on the line. And I think a lot of it was kind of like, look, there are certain ways, there are like, you know, kind of simple things you can do, right? Like, if people have questions about the data, you know, make sure there's a way for someone to contact, you know, whoever owns or whoever is the stakeholder, right? Like little things, like, you know, that is still a battle that has to be fought on a lot of cities, right?
And that I think is the same, and you'll see that. And the advantage of that being, you'll find that almost universally everybody has that that story where like someone's like, oh no, we can't put out all our 301 data at once because then people are going to analyze it and realize that we're not doing things fast enough. And then what'll happen? And then, you know, it's a snowball effect.
Oh, okay. Let's focus in on that for a second. 311 is what? Is that's the number? That's like a phone number thing you call for help?
311 is a non-emergency number. So like if you want to fix a pothole or get your sidewalk fixed, that's a number that you can call locally. And a lot of cities have 311 lines set up or some non-emergency equivalent.
Okay. So, and it already has tech behind it. It's not like you invented 311. 311's have been around for years, whatever. It does what it does. And there's some kind of back end or something that ties it all together. Who knows how it works, but some kind of metadata is being collected. Some kind of database administrator works on this thing. There's just like, who knows what the cobweb of how this thing works is. And let's say somebody's like, that would be really cool data to have. What is it? Like step one, convince people to open up data. Step two, make sure the data has some kind of portal to find it. Step three, massage data. Like, what is the, what, you know, I don't know. Focusing on just 311, what's the story of that data?
So let's take 311. And it's, so we're about to release the city of Miami's 311 data and their building permit data. So both of those are pretty similar in that they describe historical work. So one of the things is that it helps reduce the number of public records requests that you might get on particular cases, right? So that's always like a good way. What value can we bring to every day-to-day city employees to show them, hey, listen, if you do this, this is going to, you know, reduce this unnecessary workload. Mm-hmm. So we try to do a lot of that to appeal, and what could that be? So you might get, there's probably some person somewhere that their job, at least part-time job, is to answer public records requests, FOIA requests on, you know, what building permit? I need, you know, information about X building permit from, you know, 2010. Can you send that over to me? And someone will have to go and pull up that one record and then repeat this, you know, X number of times a week. So open data, you're providing essentially all that information in one big flat file, and people can do self-service on it. So convincing folks that this could potentially be, you know, this is some like, you know, basic request that you don't have to meet every day creates time within government, and people start to kind of turn their heads and be like, oh, all right, I see where that's valuable.
So,
and then on top of that, you're creating an opportunity. I'll let Ernie talk about this. You know, you throw an API on top of that, and all of a sudden you unlock, you know, this, you know, maybe some visualization, some map that they've been dying to see within city government, or some kind of public facing thing. All of a sudden,
yeah,
someone on the outside can.
I'm kind of looking at it, and it's like, it's a just this data, which I don't know, it looks fairly open, but maybe there's still work to be done here. You can like browse it. The record number 4 in here, ticket ID 13-000.175, issue type, pit bull investigation. Case owner, uh-huh. Animal services.
Yep.
Address 2985 Southwest 2nd Street. Like, there's a bunch of data in here. So you really could then, like, just for funsies, you could build a map that shows it all. There's all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Here's another good example. So one of the things, so in Miami, health restaurant inspection data is actually on the state level. So it's actually recorded by the state of Florida, not necessarily Miami-Dade County. State of Florida has their information provided in like one honkin' huge 50 like meg CSV file, right? Mm-hmm. So the only people that are able to kind of parse this are maybe like journalism websites, maybe Channel 7.
Yeah, yeah. It's a CSV, not an API, you know?
So what we did is that we one of the projects that we have a bunch of devs working on is just even having just a simple RESTful API on, we have it literally just scrape, like extracting the CSV, doing a bunch of ETL extraction, translation, I forget what the L stands for. And then you know, allowing a bunch of like RESTful like APIs that thank you.
I can't believe I did.
So that could be a civic hacking project. Isn't like building the app or doing UX or providing yourself to be a user tester or something. Like a really nerdy way to contribute would be to like turn a CSV into an API.
Really, all of
them. And the first, so and you're asking me, so who? How did I get into the city? I'll tell you I'll try to tell this quickly, but it speaks to this as well. One of the first things that I was asked for while I was still at the county was the local business tax data. So this was all, you know, if you open up a new business in town, you've got to get, you know, a license for that. That's called a local business tax. So this is a record somewhere. Mm-hmm. Someone asked for that data so they could do some analysis on like businesses that had opened and had closed and where these businesses were. So I went over to the tax collector at the time, Fernando Casamayor. And you know, we had worked together a little bit from my department and his department, and I asked him for this CSV file, and he said, "Yeah, sure, I'll crank this out for you." Did it in about 2 seconds. I said, "I'm gonna hand it to these people. It was like the beginnings of Code for Miami. And he said, yeah, no problem. He tells a story now. He goes, you walked out my door and I had no idea you were going to come back. I handed it to these guys in Code for Miami. Code for Miami built this API around that data.
Right.
And then someone else came in after, used that API and built a map of these businesses, just plotted them on a map. This whole thing happened in about 2 weeks. I went back to the tax collector, to Fernando, and I asked the I showed him. I was like, hey, listen, that thing you gave me a couple of weeks ago, here's what somebody built with it. I show him this map. It's this really like impressive, you know, probably not so impressive technically per
it's
se.
It's literally a leaflet map.
Right. I show him this thing. His eyes just like open right up. He's like, these guys built this in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. He's like, I've been asking for this for over a year from our IT shop. He goes, you did this in 2 weeks? And I was like, yeah. I mean, I didn't do it, but this is what happened just by you opening up this data set. So that data set was the first, I call it the first open data set that we put out there in Miami-Dade County. Fernando ended up becoming the assistant city manager at the city of Miami. So he's really the one that brought me on board, and he still tells the story to this day. That little thing that happened, you know, Fernando has that story, and as an assistant city manager, still when he's having conversations with an IT department, that picture is in his mind as he's making business requests. He has a different understanding of what's possible now as a result of this prototype that was built by this team. And also,
sure,
he's obviously far more okay now releasing open data. He was so willing to do it and was rewarded by this incredible thing from a government perspective, that it was just a really powerful thing. And that's an easy thing to replicate. If someone provides your data, we can do the same thing with permitting. We could do the same thing with 311 data. We can tell these stories.
And then ideally even put them all together. I still think of, like, I imagine, I don't know, I live in Milwaukee too. That's where my home is. And I'm walking down the street, you see some business and you're like, and I wonder who owns that business and when they registered it. I guess I would, A, assume that I could find that out probably somehow, but I'd probably have to like go downtown and like climb some stairs and like file an official request, and they'd get back to me in 6 to 8 weeks or some kind of thing. But is that it shouldn't be that way, right?
That's exactly right. And sometimes, you know, it's also the question of time. Like, that might be really interesting to you today, but if it's going to take 6 weeks, you won't be that interested in 6 weeks, right? So
yeah, right.
Being able to have that, you know, that gives momentum to people getting more interested and engaged with government. A lot of times people disengage because it's like, you can't capitalize on that moment in time.
I mean, you just assume that you can't. There's all kinds of things like I assume I can't do. Dave, what's going through your mind?
You know, I'm a few things here. I'm browsing around some of the projects for Austin because it makes more sense to me being in Austin. And there's just a cool like park explorer near my house, you know, and it seems like the kind of goal of the civic hacking stuff is maybe you're just taking a mashup, whether that's like some data plus a map or two data sets plus a graphing engine or something. You can kind of like start bringing to life things that don't really exist. And I had the like fortune of hearing Todd Park, the former CTO of America, I guess was his job, under Barack Obama, give a talk just talking about kind of the role of government is maybe just being like a API warehouse. And is that kind of how you see things working?
Yes. So I wholeheartedly believe in that as being like a cornerstone. I mean, there might be exceptions to that, but that should be, we cannot create these apps fast enough. I mean, sometimes somebody's got like this, everything's like, oh, we want to build this app. And we've invested, you know, 6 months of our time building things within government. That's probably being optimistic. And then, you know, by the time it's done, people don't necessarily care anymore. You invested all this money and it's not exactly what people wanted because you didn't really ask them.
You should have spent that 6 months opening up the data. So next
time, just do it. And you end up with like people building whatever they want or need, and you're not sort of imposing your view of what they need on them. So open data is within that frame, you know, within that perspective, just releasing APIs that people can tap into and build things. And plus it's some skin in the game for your community. And, you know, I think people respond to that and want that. They
right.
want to get, all right, you know, we can complain about government all day long. All right, now I'm going to make it easier for you to join in the conversation. Let's do this together. And all of a sudden now we're in it, and that changes the dialogue around people in government altogether.
It definitely is. It requires a shift of thinking for a lot of folks. You know, like I sat down, my kind of like my first week as a fellow in San Francisco, and one of the first things they told me was like, be prepared for be prepared for environments and technologies and mind shifts that are literally 20 years behind. You know, like they were telling us like, you know, I know you love like your Ruby and your Python, but if it means you have to like build something in Java or like COBOL, you do it. Right, mm-hmm. Because that is what you need to do to get something up, right? And it was a kind of a shocking moment, but yeah, it's true.
It looks like if you do, this is just a dumb little thing, but it makes me think of what you're saying. There's one of these. Here's a project in Austin, Dave. Cute Pets Austin. Somebody made a Twitter bot because somebody made some open data of like. Animal services animals that have been
mm-hmm. rescue pets yeah. Come to the rescue.
So they made a Twitter bot on October 2nd, 2014, and it's still cranking out cute animal pics, you know.
And it's been forked. We literally forked it, and our co-captain, like a former co-captain, Christina, built one for Miami-Dade County Animal Services.
Miami-Dade Animal Services had used
it. See, this thing's gone a long way.
I can't look at this or I'm going to get...
While they were building it, they're probably just like, whatever, you know.
What I mean, right? Like, this is kind of one other cool thing about Brigades is that because everything we build is open source, we literally fork like projects off of each other left, right, and sideways. And we will appropriate it for our own things. In the case of Cute Pets, that was a really, really awesome open source project that was built by a fellowship team that was based out in Denver. So it actually started in Denver, and then it got forked into many cities, including Austin, just because it was, you know, it was built in such a way where it was really easy to do.
And another great example of that is CityGram. So CityGram... is another project that takes the 311 data, and it actually will send you a text message every morning. You can give it like a radius, so I can pick like my house. I can draw a circle around my house, and any service requests that were open within that radius overnight will be texted to me in the morning. So I wake up in the morning to like a text message, and I can see, I was like, oh, look, this person reported illegal dumping down the street from my house.
Yeah.
And you've geofenced it to only where you care about. Oh, wow, that's so cool.
Right.
That is awesome. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by CodePen Projects. Da-da, wa-da-da-da. It was a huge release for us at CodePen. It took us over a year of building it. We had an all-new tech stack for building it. React and Redux and Immutable JS and stuff all sitting on top of our Rails stack. It was really fun to work on, and it was a huge, huge project. Everybody on the team played a part in it. What it is like a full-on IDE kind of thing in the browser, like I mentioned at the top of the show. You have this sidebar full of files, which you can create right there in the interface. You know, just click new file, click new folder, give it names, and just rock and roll. You can build stuff from scratch, or you can just drag and drop stuff. So if you have a folder full of images and JavaScript and JSON and SAS files and icons and stuff, drag and drop it right onto that sidebar, and it'll upload this stuff for you and give you access to play with it. Then, you know, you're playing with it, you're building a project. All the stuff works that you expect to work. I mean, I think it's such a big deal that you can, like, have a... like style.scss, and then import all your SAS partials in there, which is how so many of us work in SAS land. Not just a huge chunk of SAS, but individual bits of it. Same thing in JavaScript, I feel like. So many people are used to writing import star from React or whatever, and they get all the functions. Module includes. It's just like the way JavaScript is heading. You can do that now because you can process your projects with Webpack and Babel, writing CodePen projects, which is great. It, you know, just the tip of the iceberg of what's possible in CodePen projects. Then you're working on it, you're done, you share it, just like you can a pen, only people are now looking at your code and the rendered version of it together. Like CodePen is normally, you know, it's not just looking at the code or just looking at the rendered version of that code, it's both together. very cool and fun. You know, you open up stuff in the sidebar. You have tabs at the top. You can reorder them. You can close them. You have a context menu in the sidebar for renaming files, finding files, copying paths to files, duplicating files. It's kind of nice. I think it's actually a little better than the default sidebar in Sublime Text, if I don't say so myself. The drag and drop uploading is really fun. You got to try that. It's great for teaching. It's great for making simple little one-off sites. And I should say, a big part of this is deployment. It's the fact that you can, when you're done with it, then you can literally deploy it out, and we'll give you a CodePen URL you can put it at, and you can share that. And it's just a totally clean, unfettered version of code, you know, your project. It's just the code at that URL. You share it with whoever you want. Or you can map that to a custom domain. So it's like if you buy like mycoolwebsite.cool or whatever, you can point the A records at the IP addresses we give you, and boom, you're now you've built and are maintaining a project right through CodePen and nothing else, which is pretty darn cool, I think. And it also makes it so you can have kind of like a dev version and a deployed version. You know, you can work on your project and be saving it without necessarily deploying that, which is cool. All the comforts of CodePen are there. All the preprocessors that you're used to. We have Nunjux in there now, though. That's cool. That isn't available in the pen editor. And I guess I'll stop there because I've been rambling on long enough. Please check it out, CodePen Projects. So moving the story forward a little bit is closer to what I alluded to at the beginning of this, in that it has a kind of an extra cool ending, or not really ending because it's not even launched yet, but I just know that Mike has been involved with, and I don't know what your involvement is, Ernie, but certainly Mike has a lot to do with this, is that there's a new, at least alpha website for literally the city of Miami, right? So holy crap, you know, like you get involved, do a little civic hacking, and all of a sudden, you know, we're changing the most important web portal for the people that live in the city. So what's the story there?
So yeah, 100%. I mean, that website, now that I'm at the city, you know, there's been some great people within the city before I got there that were pushing for this new presence. Diana Gonzalez, our communication director. You've got a web team within our IT shop, Manny Otero, that were sort of spearheading. You know, we need a change. We need to do something. When I jumped on board, they knew a little bit of my history working with these guys, and they said, "Hey, can you help us do this?" I said, "Absolutely. Let's take everything we've learned and let's dump it into this process. Let's take like this agile mentality that we've learned from these folks that have been working in the private sector for a while. Let's build a site that way. Let's take user testing and let's throw that in here. Let's take." Kind of this new model of user experience design, all this stuff that we were sort of playing with and learning from that we were learning in brigade nights that, you know, government traditionally hasn't been so great at doing. We were looking at what, you know, you mentioned Todd Park and what was happening at the federal level. Agencies like USDS and 18F were just doing some fantastic work on this level, and we wanted to prototype that at the city. So we proposed that, all right, we know that building a website could easily take a long time to procure. We talked about this earlier. We've seen it happen in other cities where, you know, these are big six-figure projects. We think that for a very, very small pilot project, we can do something in about 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. And we set out to do that. We brought in a partner called Open Cities, BTDT. A guy named Jack Maddens was helping us out with that. He was also, I knew him from the Code for America days as well. So we said, hey, we're going to embark on this this project. We want to do this in 10 weeks. He said, I think I can help you guys model that. And we took 10 services. We took 10 services that we thought might, not necessarily the top hit ones, but we thought might be interesting models, departments that were engaged already. And we said, hey, these departments, if you're into it, we'll model your services and we'll use this as a model for the other 1,000 services we have to do for the city. I reached out to Ernie. Ernie and I had helped him out a little bit with this, just kind of volunteering as being a government partner for it. We had reached out to Unite Foundation to apply for a grant to build a cut group, a civic user testing group that was based on a model that came out of Chicago.
Yep.
And what that model attempted.
Okay, so step one is like we do testing before you're like, let's fire open Photoshop here. We're ready.
You got it. You got it. So we talked to, working with Jack internally and then talking to Ernie, we sort of did a lot of early discussions with staff to identify these services and sort of before we start building anything, Let's start with the user testing. And that was a big part of my messaging when I first came on board. It's just users first, mm-hmm. Which was sort of starting with that in such like a strong way. And every part of our
brand. Was it like, hi, user, person who lives in Miami? Let's say you were, I'm sure you had a script or whatever, but it was like, under what circumstances would you come to the portal for the city of Miami? And then once you got here, what do you want to do? Is it A, look at a picture of the mayor? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I chuckle because you pretty much nailed
it. Pretty much nailed it. and so that is for sure, you know.
That was low on the list, I imagine.
Yeah. But it's, you know. Yeah, what can I say on this thing? Yeah, arguably some people don't think it's that low on the list. So convincing the story that is less important than like your top 10 services was a story that we really wanted to demonstrate and test. And the reactions were great. So Knight funded this project. So Ernie has been administering the cut group. So Ernie was, I'll let him talk about that, but he was getting the testers and the users
something
ready.
User
right.
testing.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, and the thing is that it's super important to have testers, especially in a place like Miami. We have one of the most diverse, you know, we're one of the most diverse cities in the nation. We are the only county in the United States with an immigrant majority at 52%, right? Like literally 60 to 70% of the people that live in this area do not speak English as a primary language. They do not speak English at home, right? Also, one of the highest income disparities in the country, right behind the Bay Area, you know. So we have really different people speaking really different languages here, right? And it's important that if this is going to be a website where you have to basically execute basic tasks that are super important to living in Miami, everyone has to understand or at least make it relatively simple to do these tasks. So, I mean, so that's the thought process of even handling the cut group in the first place. You know, it's definitely been, you know, full transparency, really challenging, you know, running this group and doing a full-time job, because this is, you know, this is a very intense thing that literally takes up a lot of your time trying to wrangle a lot of different people. But it's also rewarding. You know?
Plus, Ernie has to deal with me, which is like his favorite thing to do when I'm in like, hey, Ernie, I got this great idea. You want to help?
So Mike was also my quote-unquote mentor/manager/partner when I was a fellow. So we've kind of built this.
I'm the best he ever had.
It's like this Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello kind of rapport.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Is that a requirement for transforming your government? A Abbott and Costello?
I'm not going to lie. Like this, getting in it with the... It's been one of the greatest rewards. Like I've got, you know, a lifelong friend now. In,
aww,
in this
thanks,
guy.
Sugar.
Hey, man. But it's just been, you know, it's great to kind of do this with your friends. So
right.
We have built, you know, half built some stuff together. And now we're building this thing that, you know, to carry on the story of what we're doing with the Alpha Man, we pulled it off in 10 weeks. It was the city got really engaged in it. You know, the cut group really gave us some great feedback. We got some real users testing it, and now our, you know, city manager was super excited about it. We've got city government people like stopping me in the hallways and going, oh my God, I love what you did on the set. We put like a, you know, we've got this neighborhood in Miami, Wynwood, which is like, you know, got a bunch of street art. We took
I was just there this last weekend. It looks like the background of the website has some cool Wynwood walls, mural stuff.
We did. We got a local artist, man, to, we just kind of let him know, hey, is it okay if we splash this on the back of our government website? So we splashed a bunch of graffiti on the back of our government site just to get people to think about it differently. And we were like, we don't know. People are going to love this and hate it. Well, let's ask them. So...
And the answer is, by the way, yes.
Both, right? So
folks loved it and hated it.
No one feels in the middle. Everyone either like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. Or
like
oh my God, please put a cityscape in the back because you're a government, right?
Right.
So, but we're on our way now to, you know, we knocked out like, I think, 8, 9 services. And we're on our way to do you know, hundreds next.
So here's the, I assume this is public because it's the URL isn't protected or anything. So the URL, if people want to check this out and see what a government, a city government website could look like, it's alpha.miamigov.com. So that's cool. And you'll go there and it'll say, welcome to the alpha. You know, there's a please tell me what you think kind of thing. So the feedback is coming. But if, you know, in the grand tradition of Shop Talk Show, let me mouth explain what a visual design looks like, which is impossible and awful, but I'll try it. You go there and like Mike said, the background of the website is a very active, busy mural. So you can see how that would be divisive, but it doesn't impede the readability of the text because the text is still set in this white block that's right in the middle of the page. Above all that, though, there's the City of Miami seal. Great. There's a big, clear search thing, which makes a lot of sense to me, because and in the search prompt is find almost anything on our website, which is kind of awesome because it's like when you go there, there's probably a zillion things you might want to do. Why not emphasize that as being... As long as you've done a good job, I would assume, with search, that's fantastic. You know, if you're confident in your own search, that seems good. And I tested it out a little bit good. That's not even my favorite thing about the site, though. The best thing about this, when you're looking at it, if you ask me, is there's like 9 things that are just in really super plain language that are right there that are action driven, like seem like obvious things that I would want to do in the City of Miami. Here's a bunch of them. Get a permit for your home. Host a garage sale. Report a pothole. Report illegal dumping. Request tree trimming. Report damaged sidewalk. Enroll in a parenting course. Clearly things that probably came from the testing. You know, like, what do you want to do on this website? Well, here it is. So it just seems like, oh, that's fantastic. You click. And is that what you mean, Mike, when you said these are the, we've knocked out 8 services or whatever? Are these the services that you knocked out?
And you hit on a sort of a key message, and it was just great to have that come together, was the plain language approach. Getting out of this like government speak, man, has been just a message we've heard from residents loud and clear. And we just sort of everybody knows it. No one wants to see that. But somehow we have historically in government have this commitment to speaking in legalese. So I, as well as you mentioned, one of my favorite things is the plain language approach that we've taken.
But it's also the most accessible, again, yeah, to a place like Miami, right? Where folks might not speak English as they shouldn't have to. If folks, you know, move here from Europe or Latin America, they shouldn't have to be punished for, you know.
Yeah. And we gave, so one of the things that, you know, I mentioned, you know, Jack Maddens and Open Cities, who partnered with us on this, they Jack brought to the table the Hemingway app tool, which was we introduced to anybody. We didn't want like tech people writing these pages. We actually brought in the business owners from all those services that you see. We brought in the actual owners of those processes, and we used the process of building the site also as this proxy for process improvement. So while they were writing the page, we were actually challenging them to think about their process a little bit. And then we'd ask them to write a little bit about it. They threw it in the Hemingway editor to see what reading level it was at. So we tried to keep them under an 8th grade reading level.
Yeah.
So it helped as opposed to, you know, it was sort of educating them also to write in more plain language styles. You could see that their brain sort of started turning a little bit. They were engaged in process improvement while writing the page. So instead of it just like, hey, we're going to splash this stuff, we're just going to upload this thing to the web. You know, if you really look at our websites, are 24-hour, like, you know, front desk, right? You know, we're only open 8 hours a day. And, you know, when we're not open, where are they going? They're going to the website, and getting people to understand that was also super powerful. And I think we came along.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about that. This isn't one organization. This isn't just the government that does this. You have a button here, rent a park facility. There's a whole subsection of human beings in the government that only care about this button and not so much about the report illegal dumping button because they just don't work there. So I click rent a park facility. I go to this page. It loads another page that's still on the same website. And it looks a lot like the one to host a garage sale too, which is kind of cool. So maybe, and then you scroll down. Oh, here's a bunch of relevant information about this. Probably just what I need to know to rent a parks facility. And then a form. It looks like a fancy, I don't know what you're using here. Maybe it's a hand rolled thing, but it's kind of sweet. And then I just say like, where's my event? Am I affiliated with an organization? All this. So immediately I'm applying to rent a park, which is pretty great. Did this parks department need to reinvent this process to accommodate this alpha website? Is this the form that they were already using? Or
some cases, I don't remember specifically in the case of Parks, but in some cases there was some PDF form that was a printout that they made people sort of fill out. Huh. The first thing that...
So you go up to them and be like, what if instead of a PDF, this just arrived in your inbox?
Oh, what? Tell me your secrets, wizard.
I mean, you'd be shocked, right? Like, you, if you even getting like a permit on the county level is nuts. It's insane. Yeah. It's literally like 20 PDF like purgatory.
And there was this great visual that we showed, and again to try to describe it, but it was so for example, permitting, and we're still trying to tackle this problem, but it's a great one where there's like one generic permitting application, whether you're building like a fence or like a 50-story building, it's like literally the same app. So obviously you would fill out some fields for some and some for others. So the power of the web lets us not have to do that in all cases. Without spending and creating, printing a bunch of paper on multiple forms, right? These things can get expensive. So we had the visual of like this, you know, the remote control, the grandma's remote that has like, you know, all right, I'm only going to watch channel 24. So you have all the other numbers sort of taped up and blacked out so that you can only see 24. Grandma can only press these two buttons. And it was sort of the same philosophy. We showed that slide and said, people, this is how we want you to design that form. All those other fields that no one's ever, that you don't need for this particular page, just get those out of the way and let's reduce the visual clutter so that grandma knows exactly what to do and is not visually overwhelmed by all these options and choices.
Fantastic. So God, there's so many aspects to this. It's wrangling all the right people to say yes to even build the thing. And then once you got the yes, it's, you know, getting all the different services aligned to care about it and all the testing. And I can't imagine, because it's just not the same as the business world that probably so many people listening to this show are used to. But once you get it done.
That's right. It's a lot of fun. I'd have to just give a lot of credit. It was I did not expect it when I got to the city, but there's been an appetite. There actually is an appetite, which was even a big revelation to me that I've been in it, appetite within government to do these things. A lot of times it's just not having the tools. So even me in it as a government person was surprised by the appetite, certainly at the city. We're like, you know, my city manager and your assistant city manager and department directors were like, yeah, go do that thing you're describing. And that was that was powerful. That's how you get this stuff done. It's it really does require that sort of leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been awesome.
And being really careful, I imagine too. I mean, what if somebody's like, oh, we need some 311 data, and then they're like, oh, sure, here you go. And then it revealed a bunch of, don't you have to be careful about data sometimes?
For sure. So I'll give the quick story. So I'm working very closely with their building department now, and there are some challenges there. And part of, it's related work, but it's sort of a second part of my role on the business process improvement side. A lot of my role has been exploring their data. I've always have in the back of my mind that my goal at some point is to release this openly, and we're getting ready to release permitting data openly. But for the last 6 months, I've just been exploring it myself, getting the departments comfortable with seeing views that other people, and really preparing them for, hey, listen, this is in there. Like, it's taking you X amount of time to put together a fence. And they're like, oh, it is? It's like they've never even had access to this number before. And sort of preparing them, like kind of putting out one of those numbers out into the wild and seeing, hey, listen, we put it out there. The world didn't blow up, right? We can all work together on bringing that number down. So, you know, the next time it doesn't take that long to build a fence. And that is a lot of like people work. And again, the departments have been naturally a little bit uncomfortable with that, because you know it's like walking out naked in some cases, right? Like
crime,
but
data,
once you do it, right. Once you know,
crime data is also the quintessential kind of like
right.
Unending debate across cities in America, right? Folks absolutely want crime data, But you know, for a couple of like cities, you know, it is, you know, a lot of people like feel very uncomfortable like letting that information out.
Sure.
It's like,
and yeah, and you don't want to like, you don't do like personal, you know, people don't, you know, even though a lot of this is public record and people just don't know it,
absolutely.
Flooding them with it all at once. It's a debate. You're going to have that. I mean, it's probably a whole other show.
I see. You're not changing any laws here. The data is either public or it isn't, but there's some ethical concern about.
You got it. But where we can, we want to do this. Like we want to prepare departments responsibly to be able to have this be a constructive dialogue. So I just try to race as quickly as I can to bring departments on board in a way that they're not caught off guard. Look, this is coming. You know, people can get this already today. It's public records law. But let's get you really active with your data so we can release it and people can build cool stuff and we can build cool websites and we can do these cool things. Obviously, you know, not super easy, but easy enough.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for coming on the show here. We really, really appreciate it. I think I'm excited about, you know, I don't know, just fixing government or like through technology, using technology. So this is very exciting. But before we go, I think we should just round up. Like, how can people follow you, see what the city of Miami is doing? How do they?
We usually say and give you money, but that might be some ethical concerns there. With
yeah,
the
give you money, but I guess they could.
No,
you could move to Miami and pay.
There you go.
Yeah, you could totally do that. You can follow at City of Miami on Twitter. That's probably where we are most active. You can. I tend to have. I'm at Sarasti, Sarasti. If you want to follow me, and I will highlight a few other.
It has nothing to do with his government work, but he's also in a band that he would never like pimp out. His band is called Raker Music, R-A-K-E-R. Literally has a single on Spotify. I'm going to literally out him.
You're the man.
On his music.
Nice.
Listen to our song Gospel on Spotify.
Like, nice. Nice. And there it is. And there it is. And then on Twitter, I am Ernie at L-Y-D. L-Y-D, of course, being for that old blog that I no longer maintain. So.
I'm starstruck having had a conversation with you, Ernie. This is great. Great.
I'm starstruck every day, man.
Oh,
every day.
This is. I'm talking to Chris freaking Coyier here. Like, what?
All right. Well, thank you all so much for coming on the show. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this and your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to star heart favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Tweet it out on the Twitters. You can follow us at Shop Talk Show. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one because people want to hire people like you. And I think that's all we have time for today. Chris?
Shoptalkshow.com.